Got a new Bloomberg Morning Consult poll of the seven battleground states, and they show a narrowing race that perhaps Joe Biden has hit bottom and is now narrowing the gap between himself and Donald Trump in key states, including Michigan, where there was quite a divide between them just a few months ago, 5 and 6 points, now a dead heat, 45% for each. We are also seeing a narrowing in North Carolina. Wisconsin, Biden has actually taken the lead. Pennsylvania, a dead heat there as well. What does it mean? Can we draw anything from it? Or is it just the fact that the president only had one way to go? Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic, here to talk about that. Also RFK's VP pick. Jason, good morning.
Top of the morning, guys. How you doing?
Great to have you with us. What do you make of this morning consult poll? Also, it seems that we've got an exclusive Ipsos poll also saying that it appears that Joe Biden's approval rating has bounced off the bottom as well and is up slightly.
Well, I think on the Ipsos poll, you're absolutely right. There's only one way it could go because you can't get further in the basement than he is. But as I dug into the numbers on this Bloomberg Morning Consult poll and compared it to other polling, the headlines around this tightening don't actually match up with the data. And that's almost across the board. I mean, take Michigan, for instance. You know, you mentioned a 45-45 tie. There have been seven polls this year that have showed Trump up between 2 points and 8 points.
Right.
This morning consult poll was conducted March 8th through the 12th. There were three polls done after that that had Trump up three, had Trump up eight, and one had a tie. If you go to Arizona, there have been four polls this year that show Trump with a 4 to 8 point lead. The morning consult poll shows Trump up five.
Right.
You go to Nevada, there were two polls that showed Trump up two and five, Trump's up two. And, you know, I could go through each of these states. This is an anomaly within the other polls, but it's also done weeks before some of the other polls that have subsequently come out that actually show Trump in the same place or better. So I think this is a little bit of the media trying to cheer Biden on. But when you get into the numbers, there's not really any there to a tightening in this race.
Interesting.
Well, Jason, given the margin of error in the poll and the fluidity of voter preferences, how much weight should we really assign to these latest numbers?
Well, that's an important point. I mean, you know, all of these are within the margin of error. I think what you look for is trends. And if you go to the Real Clear Politics aggregate of the averages, I think that's a good place to look. But you also look at the trend lines there. If you take a state like Michigan, like I said, there were seven polls that showed Trump up 2 to 8 points just in 2024. Not including the morning consult poll. So, you know, you have to assume that when you look at that Trump's probably sitting around 4 to 5 points once you shake out the averages of those polls and the margins of error. I would say that all of these states are within the margin of error. But I think we also need to remember that, you know, Trump voters have been frustratingly difficult to poll because a lot of them don't participate in the poll. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, when you look at 2016, nobody saw the Trump victory coming because polling just didn't reflect it. In 2020, I think this is an interesting thing to consider, given the national polls have pretty consistently shown Trump with a lead. Donald Trump never led in the polls in 2020, very narrowly lost, but never won. And he's pretty consistently leading in all the polls this year. So even without accounting for that underrepresentation of Trump voters, you know, he's still in a much better position than he was in 20 and in 2016.
Jason, just switching gears, I want to ask you about this tweet. It originated from Matt Gaetz, and he listed the Republicans who voted for the $1.2 trillion spending bill so the government would not shut down. And so it lists the Republicans who voted yes. That would be James, Heinziga, Molinar, McClain.
All good conservatives.
Yeah. And so the Michigan GOP like retweeted it and said, quote, "This is shameful. Michiganders, pay attention to who's on the list and remember their names." Will this have any standing when these people try and get reelected?
Listen, I think there's frustration with the base. I mean, the new Biden budget is $1.8 trillion in deficit spending. It's, I think, $5 trillion in new taxes. You know, we do control the House, but we control the House now by a single vote, with Mike Gallagher departing earlier on the early on the heels of Ken Buck of Colorado departing early. So, you know, there's a political reality, which is you still have to make government work. And we don't control the Senate, and we don't control the presidency. And so we could certainly dig in and create an economic crisis for the country and a political crisis for Republicans. But we're probably not going to get what we want. And all we are going to do is delve further into chaos. What we need to do is do what we can in trimming spending while we're in the position that we're in, and then go win elections. Because, frankly, since 2016, when Donald Trump surprised everybody, we have not won anything since. We lost the House in 18. We lost the Senate in 20. We barely got the House back in 22.
Right.
And we lost the presidency. So we have been at our most vulnerable position in decades. I mean, I think going back to 1994. And so we shouldn't pretend we're a governing majority, because we are not. We need to expand our majorities. And having people like Matt Gaetz taking shots at his colleagues within the House Republican Conference. And listen, some of those people are in safe seats, but someone like John James, who won by half a percentage point.
Right.
Does Matt Gaetz think we're going to be better off in the minority next year, or are we going to be better off in the majority?
Well, so it's retweeted by the Michigan GOP,
now,
which the Twitter account apparently still under the control of Christina Caramo's wing of this. It's like they want to eat their young.
Yes, it is not the new Pete Hoekstra. Sensible people. It is still Christina Caramo and her band of hooligans that control that Twitter site. So yeah, it's not the Michigan GOP as an organization. It is, you know, Christina and her political terrorists that are still controlling.
How problematic is it, Jason, that they don't have control of the Twitter account yet, or apparently even the mygop.org website?
You know, having been the executive director, the website doesn't get a lot of traffic anyway, so
okay.
That's not particularly problematic. But they've got a pretty wide following on Twitter, and, you know, that is a medium that is proactive. You're reaching out to voters, not something passive that they have to come to. So
yeah, they have 44,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah. And it creates confusion, because people think, oh, well, the Michigan Republican Party is attacking these, you know, Republican members of Congress. There must be a problem. They don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Most people, frankly, don't pay attention to the battle over the GOP organization in the state and don't really understand what's going on. So, yeah, it creates some confusion. But hopefully in the next week or two, Chairman Hoekstra and his team get control of the apparatus and start focusing on winning elections instead of beating up our own people.
Jason, your thoughts on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announcing that Nicole Shanahan is going to be his vice presidential selection?
Well, listen, she's not an unimpressive person, but it's pretty obvious that she was chosen because she is a very wealthy person and might help fund his efforts to get ballot access. I did find it interesting. I mean, looking at mainstream media coverage of this, I mean, this should be a pretty newsworthy event. I think you guys would agree. We're talking about it today, right? Well, I went on a number of media websites this morning before this interview. Politico, which you would think covers all things Politico, does not have the story on its front page. The Wall Street Journal does not have it on its front page. The Detroit News does not have it on its front page. The Detroit Free Press does not have it on the front page of its website. The Washington Post, halfway down their site, has a little sidebar, and the headline is "What Kennedy's VP Pick Means for 2024. USA Today has a column, RFK Jr.'s pick, the perfect running mate for his 2024 vanity campaign. You can tell that the mainstream media is doing everything they can to undermine Robert Kennedy's candidacy, because he takes away from Joe Biden in particular. There's some arguments to be made that he takes away. I don't know that she changes the game. Most people, you know, probably even a month from now are not going to know that she was the choice, given the lack of coverage of it. I think there's some other folks with bigger names and probably more provocative, like some of the names he mentioned, Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura. I don't think she changes the game other than the wallet that she carries.
Yeah, I got to say, though, in the Journal's defense, it may not be on the front page, but it's the second most popular story that they have. after the bridge collapse. So there's a high level of interest.
Most news websites or newspapers you place on the page has to do with how much traffic your story is generating. So the fact that this is the second most interesting story on their page, yet they don't have it on their page, is, I think, telling.
Yeah, yeah. No question that it speaks to the level of interest there.
One last question. We only got a few moments here. The RNC, they are hiring, and the Washington Post says they've had conversations with people who have knowledge of these job interviews with the RNC, and they're asking potential employees, was the 2020 election stolen? Is that fair to do?
Listen, I don't think it is a smart thing to do, but I think from their vantage point, they want true believers that are going to unquestionably follow what Donald Trump's lead on these things. And so, you know, do they want to employ people that are dissenting from what is, you know, one of the main thrusts of Donald Trump's candidacy? I understand why they're doing it, but I don't think it's very productive, one, in getting the best talent, because frankly, I don't know many good political operatives and consultants and staff that believe the things that have been pushed over the last 4 years. And so you are thinning the herd of talent that you're going to be able to employ if you put these kinds of litmus tests on them.
All right. Jason Rowe, always appreciate your insights, my friend. You have a great week.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
All right. And so, yeah, kind of blowing up that Morning Consult poll when you really look into the data behind it. Mm-hmm. Appreciate his perspective on that. When we come back, going to do a quick check-in on our fitness guru. Also find out what things we need to be doing to prepare for spring. That's next at 8:49.